Yeah, baby. Okay, so it's Jay's joint number 3. Welcome, everybody. And this show is going to be, well, this show, I basically talk about music, film, whatever, the arts, whatever comes to mind. Anyway, this show is going to be devoted strictly to the Nine Inch Nails album of 1994, The Downward Spiral, because it's one of my favorite albums ever, and it certainly has a significant place in my heart and memory or whatever, and so I thought I'd just talk about it. We'll play it in the background in its entirety, so settle in, people. It's going to be a fun hour. So anyway, yes, Downward Spiral, released 1994 from Nine Inch Nails, or also known as Trent Reznor, basically. And the first track off this album is called Mr. Self-Destruct. As I try to locate this in my lovely iPod. So as it starts off, there you hear this what sounds like a guy being beaten. And actually, it's not far from the truth. In fact, it is the truth, because that sound is a sample from George Lucas's... That's nice. Let's try some articulation. George Lucas's film THX 1138, and there is a scene where this dude's being beaten by one of the creepy, like, cop-looking guys in the dystopian world that he has created. So anyway, Mr. Self-Destruct. There it is. There's that clip. Yeah, boy. So, basically, the Downward Spiral was probably one of the first concept albums that I ever was exposed to, or to which I was first exposed, whatever the grammatically correct version of that phrase is. And basically, the Downward Spiral, if you haven't already gleaned from its title, is basically the journey of a guy, ostensibly Trent himself, who is going through... difficult period in his life, we'll say, questioning, you know, identity, faith, his soul, you know, his sexual prowess, I guess, all kinds of things. So, Mr. Self-Destruct, interesting. Oh, I love this part. Wait, hold on. I love this part because there's this really haunting line that Trent's saying in the background, which you can barely hear at this point. He's saying, "I am an exit." And it builds slowly throughout this bridge. It's really cool. And start to hear it there creeping in there. He's also saying, "You let me do this to you," but it's a little bit more audible. So actually, I love this album so much. And my sister was involved in a choir that at one point during her high school years, they took a trip to London to perform, and I was fortunate enough to join the ride. And there were a couple different little parties that they were being thrown during that time, and one was on a cruise ship. We were on the Thames River, and I believe, and the other one was in some recreational hall, and the DJ was playing, you know, typical kind of dance stuff, the 80s pop, whatever. And my sister and I brought him this at this time I had it on cassette, and had the guy put it in. We're like, "Hey man, put this on. We're gonna jam to this for a little while." And he didn't even give it until, I mean, basically right there at the bridge where the, you know, it kind of cuts off for a little bit and gets quiet. He just ripped the tape out of the deck. He's like, I ain't playing this shit anymore. Clearly not a fan. And now you can hear this kind of wall of sound guitar work here in the background starting to creep up that I believe he had the help of Adrian Belew on this to do some of this guitar work at the end. It's a mishmash of a bunch of different little tiny little riffs. Start to hear it there in the background. So at this point in my life, when I got this album, I was, I want to say 13. I just turned 13. And up until this point, I was basically a consumer of just 80s pop music, you know, new wave, whatever. And also a big fan of the kind of indie college band, They Might Be Giants. Listened to them a lot. And so this is my first foray into a different musical field, I guess, musical genre. And then we start with Piggy, second track off Downward Spiral. But I remember, obviously, the first song that I heard that they were playing on the radio from this album was Closer. And, you know, they edited out the F word there, so I didn't even realize what he was saying. I was young, I was naive, and I liked the tune. I liked it. It was catchy, and it had a good beat. So I go out to the mall when they actually used to have brick-and-mortar record stores and went to a Sam Goody there and looking at all the cassettes on the wall. Man, that was a long time ago. Big rows of cassette tapes. And I was there, and I was looking at Nine Inch Nails. I was looking through the different albums. I knew I was going to get the Downward Spiral, but I had no idea how long Nine Inch Nails had really been around and had been producing albums. So I was just kind of perusing their little section. And this girl, Lizzie, that I went to junior high with, comes up to me, and she's like, oh, man, that's so cool. I didn't know you were a fan of Nine Inch Nails. And so, of course, at that point, I'm caught. And I don't want to seem like the square and say, oh, yeah, I've never really listened to him, but I'm just picking up this album because it's new, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, I played the whole, like, oh, huge fan. Love Nine Inch Nails. And so, fortunately, the conversation basically ended there. I don't know if I bailed myself out and left and just bought the album and skedaddled, but I'm glad she didn't ask me anything about the songs or the group itself, because I probably would have said, oh, yeah, they're a great band. I love the guy that plays guitar and the drummer's good too. And then she'd say, no, asshole, he does all that stuff himself, basically. Although he does have some help, you know, here and there, of course. Mostly live, but occasionally he'll have people in the studio helping him out do different things. And so, needless to say, when I put on the album and the first track I heard was Mr. Self-Destruct, I was simultaneously blown away and somewhat disturbed too. I wasn't ready for that kind of grating, harsh sound and the you know, very atmospheric darkness of the album, so I wasn't ready for that. And I remember it's one of those weird things that, you know, it's strange what you remember, because I remember distinctly listening to this album for the very first time up in my den at that point, as we called it. It was kind of a little rec room for my family, but I'd kind of taken it over as my own room. But listening to this in the tape deck, and I was like, it was scaring me. I mean, I'm looking through all the artwork of Downward Spiral, which is really out there. It's very abstract and strange, and listening to all these different songs, and you know, it's very dark and far away from the security and comfort of, say, a band like They Might Be Giants, which is largely geared towards either, you know, indie college kids, and now they do children's albums. But yeah, it was disturbing. When I got to The Becoming, which is about midway through the album, I remember my mom calling me down for dinner, and I was trying to explain to her, you know, kind of how I felt listening to the album. And it was weird because, like I said, it was cool. It was definitely something new that I hadn't heard before, but I was also kind of terrified that somehow this was like claiming my soul. And eventually it probably did, because here I am, and now I like lots of dark, weird shit. I love this part in this song, because it reminds me of this place they had every Halloween. They might still have it in Lancaster, called Jason's Woods. And it's basically a haunted hayride. Here we go. I love this keyboard in the background. Oh, it's so great. And I apologize again. It's only there's certain elements in the music that are being left out, because I even tried a different output here. I thought maybe using a RCA cable would help in getting both channels working, but there's definitely some stuff left out here. If you're a big fan of the album, you can recognize it. So it's kind of irritating the hell out of me. But anyway, that little riff there on the keyboard at the end here. And a little modulation on there too. I like that because it reminds me of Jason's Woods, the very first time I went with my friend Asia. And at that point, Jason's Woods was still relatively new, and they didn't, I mean, later on in the years, because the lines got so long, they would accommodate the people that were coming just for the hayride. They put all kinds of different stuff in there to entertain people while they're waiting in line. But when I went for the very first time, it was just a long line and a guy playing acoustic guitar just trying to entertain some of the people. And, you know, off in the distance, it was getting, you know, it was twilight, it was October, it's really cool and creepy, and all you would see in the very far distance, you know, from the corn, you'd see the cornfields and stuff, but off in the far distance, there was a little purple light, because each of the little stations where the monsters would hide and stuff, and each different set they had, you know, put up, they had a little light to mark it, and I think that was the first one where there's this guy that was, like, in a cage up in a tree, you know, spitting water at you and taunting you until you're gonna die, of course. And I remember it was around this time when I started listening to this album, so did Asia, and we were talking about it a lot in the car ride over there. And for whatever reason, every time I hear that song Piggy, that very end of that part, it reminds me of Jason's Woods. It was so cool. So this is a song called Heresy. And the chorus here is, God is dead, no one cares. So the title's pretty appropriate. And very simple but cool riff coming up here on guitar. Of course, here's Trent's take on religion. Man, Jason's Woods, what a cool-ass place that was. They had, you know, of course, all the regulars, Jason and Freddy and stuff. They also had a Pinhead from Hellraiser that came up and grabbed my face from behind and scared me. They had Leatherface, and the cool thing about Leatherface was he used a real chainsaw that just took the teeth off the saw itself. So he would come up there, and you'd smell the gas from the saw and everything, and he'd put it to people's legs and stuff. It was really cool. So anyway, Jason's Woods, that's my story with that, and Piggy, because it always reminds me of that. This is a good jam, Heresy. Down here a little while he goes into the little break here in the bridge. So Nine Inch Nails clearly was my first introduction to the kind of industrial genre, and some people complain that Nine Inch Nails isn't pure industrial, because going back to the original industrial acts like Throbbing Gristle and Einstürzende Neubauten and people like them, Scraping Fetus Off the Wheel, I think was another one. There are a lot of interesting industrial names. But certainly Throbbing Gristle and Einstürzende Neubauten were kind of pioneers in the industrial genre. And after, you know, listening to Nine Inch Nails and people like Ministry and KMFDM, I started to go back in time to listen to the original industrial artists. And, you know, it got its... I should really know this by heart, but I think a lot of industrial got its name from the sound of the music. It was very mechanical, but, it was structured kind of, you know... in this 4-4 structure, but a lot of the groups back in the day, like Einstürzende Neubauten and those similar outfits, the music wasn't really music per se. It was just a lot of clanking noises. You know, people would, you know, take the hose of a vacuum cleaner and turn it in reverse and mic that, and people take jackhammers to, you know, pianos and stuff. It was weird things like that they would use to make their music. And we go with March of the Pigs, which has a cool 7-8-8-8 time signature change here. So anyway, needless to say, as much as I love the genre, I'm not a fan of early industrial work, because it's bland to me. And I know it's very avant-garde, and probably, you know, there are people out there that appreciate it, and that's great, but it's not really my thing. And Nine Inch Nails, like I said, some people don't call it as pure, because it's a little bit more rock and has, you know, a lot of pop song structures to it. But it's certainly the band that brought industrial to the mainstream, because even bands like KMFDM and Ministry, who are really big and well-known in the industrial community, didn't ever get that much commercial success. And, you know, they did well for themselves, still are, but, you know, if you ask your average radio listener on the street what their favorite Ministry song is, they're probably not going to be able to tell you. But Nine Inch Nails certainly brought it to the limelight, and Downward Spiral is just a good amalgamation of all of his talent. I mean, Pretty Hate Machine was a lot more dancey, Broken was a lot more metal, and this is kind of a little mixture of both. Part always cracked me up as a kid. So pretty. So March of the Pigs is basically Trent's ruminations on the media and kind of their unrelenting nature, and of course wanting to get the big story and exposing people and denigrating people, doing whatever they can to get their name out there and get, you know, their article published to chew and suck away the tender parts. So of course, as he says, you know, let's pick away at it, let's desecrate it, let's discredit it, all that kind of stuff. Essentially talking about the media and their vicious nature. This had a really cool video, by the way, where Trent and his backing band were just playing in this completely white room, and Trent was just, you know, going crazy, doing his usual thing. But I remember he was wearing these really kick-ass, kind of brownish, maroonish vinyl pants. And it was the first time I'd ever seen vinyl pants, and I thought they were the coolest thing ever. I ended up getting a pair later on in life. I don't think my fat ass can squeeze into them right now, but still have them. Although they're black, they're not that weird color that Trent was wearing at the time. And of course we go on to Closer, which is the song that, well, started it all for me, really, with Nine Inch Nails. Didn't know much of their work. I don't think I knew any of their work consciously, at least, until this song came out. Now that bass, the kick drum you hear there, is actually a sample from an old Iggy Pop song. I should know the name of the song right now, and it's completely escaping me. But it's one of those things that always has driven me mad as an artist myself, because I'm like, how do you think to use, of all things, just a, you know, a quarter note clip of an Iggy Pop song where the bass is all weird and you just kind of tweak it, and now that's your, you know, your kick. Works well. I gotta say, I was also pretty lucky as a kid to have really cool parents, because my mom, who primarily took me out to the mall and stuff like that, she really didn't care about, you know, the explicit nature of an album. As he says, I want to fuck you like an animal. She was always very liberal about that kind of thing, so I was, again, fortunate enough to be able to become exposed to this music early on in my life, because after having listened to Nine Inch Nails, I got into Nine Inch Nails in a big way during my early teen years, and it led to other bands that I probably wouldn't have discovered otherwise. You know, after getting into that kind of music, I started listening to a lot more heavy metal, a lot more industrial stuff. I started getting to KMFDM and Rammstein and stuff like that. So I really have to thank Trent for really exposing me to the greater music scene at large, because I who knows, I might have stuck with the pop stuff. I don't know. So Closer also has an infamously bizarre video. Kind of hard for me to describe, because there's a lot of weird things happening during the video. A lot of quick cuts of really strange imagery. And like at one point he's singing, and then like right behind him is, you know, like an open carcass of like a cow or something. Like, you know, you see at a slaughterhouse. All, you know, it's cut nicely and everything, but, you know, it's just like ribs and meat and I don't know, it's just quintessential weird Trent stuff. And he has some kick-ass boots on in this video. They're almost thigh highs. I wanna fuck Closer's a really cool song to listen to because he just layers layer upon layer. You know, it starts off with a very simple beat, and as the song goes on, he just adds element after element on top of it. And terrific song. So, you know, let's be frank here. This song is all about doing it, and I think that's pretty obvious. Of course, as it, you know, when I heard it on the radio, I didn't know what he was saying during the chorus because it was bleeped or just, you know, edited out and put, you know, they replaced it with silence. So I didn't quite know. And plus, you know, when you're early 13 and 12, I don't care. And most people aren't as sexually precocious and they know exactly what's going on. It's one of those things where, you know, you look back at a Disney movie you haven't seen in 20 years and then suddenly there are all these, you know, adult subtleties you didn't pick up when you were a kid. There's this cool guitar solo coming in here. I like the synth in the background here. It's so cool. So, Closer was a song that is good enough and certainly successful enough on the radio to merit a remix album that was called Closer to... Well, he did a cover called Closer to God, which is actually really a cool reworking of the song. But there is an entire album, just Halo 9, devoted to Closer, the song. That was a cool little marketing tool on Trent's part, was to come up with a different Halo name, or number, rather, for each of the albums and remix albums he put out. And Trent's one of the, I think, few electronic artists, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, to put out remix albums that are consistently very good. A lot of times you get a remix album and it's crap. Either the person put in zero to little work on actually remixing the song, or they rework it to such a point where it becomes like, you know, just a drone, or like, you know, let's try to make March of the Pigs into a folk song or something like that. It's just really irritating. But all of his remixes, all the remix albums are great, and there is an accompanying remix album to this entire album called Further Down the Spiral, and it is certainly worth having. Downward Spiral, by the way, if you're taking notes at home, was Halo 8, preceded by Halo 7, which was a remix album of March of the Pigs and some reptile remixes. And then, of course, you after that had Closer and Further Down the Spiral. So, of course, this little motif here that's being played on the keyboard in the background resurfaces later on down the album. We can isolate it here. So yes, we'll hear this later on, towards the very end of the album, as a matter of fact. So Closer, great track, sure brought a lot of fans that prior to this album were not. As Closer fades out, here we have Ruiner, the song Ruiner coming in. Which is a great track. And in more recent years, they released a new version of Downward Spiral that had, it was remixed in, like, you know, 5.1 surround sound. And then it came with an album that had a bunch of, you know, the remixes and stuff like that, that you could mostly find on either the remix albums or like compilations and stuff. But there were a few versions I'd never heard of, like Ruiner and Heresy, that were original kind of demo tracks that Trent had just put on the album. And it's interesting to see how they evolved. So, for instance, there was a single that came out that was not on any of the albums officially, called The Perfect Drug, which came out pretty recently after Downward Spiral was released. And I was chatting with my friend Rob, and he let me know that Perfect Drug was actually apparently originally supposed to be on the album, but for whatever reason, never actually made it on. I don't know if it just didn't fit. Somehow it didn't help the continuity of the album. But this has a great beat. So again, I was fortunate enough to have cool parents, and my mom took me to see this tour, and he was at the time double headlining. It was Trent and also David Bowie, who was promoting his Outside album. And man, what a cool concert. It was one of my first rock shows ever, and I'd been to shows before, but they were mostly, you know, people like I'd seen like the Four Tops and Steve Winwood, people like that, but this is certainly my first rock and roll show. And we were wandering through the crowd before the show started. Of course, it was in the arena at Hershey, and as we were kind of winding our way through the crowd, trying to make our way towards the closer to the front of the stage, you know, it's a big field and everything. My mom's like, "Well, that's interesting. I haven't smelled that in a while." Referring to, of course, the marijuana, and I had no clue. No clue. I was clueless. So, that was a fun show. At that point, I think I was probably... I might have just turned 14 at that point, because I think it was the year after that he finally came around to Pennsylvania, but... good show, man. Hell of a show. I ended up getting close enough, you know, probably 50 yards... 25 to 50 yards from the stage. It was cool. Had a lot of fun. Took my friend Asia again. Had a lot of good times there. So, I think it's worth noting that something interesting about this album was that it was recorded not near, but in. Bizarre. It's just a strange thing. I don't know. You know, Trent got a deal on it. I think the idea of being in this certain environment might have helped create the strange ambience of the album in general. And, you know, Trent's an eccentric guy. He set up his studio in the house that Sharon Tate was murdered in by the Manson family. So it's interesting because there are a couple songs in this album that refer to pigs, and there's a song called Piggy, and if I remember correctly, reading parts of Helter Skelter, they had scrawled pig on the wall. The piggy on the wall in one of the homes. It might have even been Sharon Tate's house. So, the studio itself had this very kind of odd checkered past, and I think it certainly did contribute to the sound of the album, because how can that not be in your head at times when you're writing? To know that, you know, one of the most infamous murders had taken place in your recording studio. So, little tidbit there. The Tate house in the west side of L.A. in the hills. That's where he recorded it. And, you know, Trent released this also under his own Nothing Records label. Although it might have been in conjunction with Interscope at the time, too. But I know that the Nothing label is on the album when you buy it. But here's a cool track. Oh, speaking of, because I always like talking about samples. So I talked about the sample of THX 1138. This sample right here, the screaming. That weird scream they keep looping. It's from a movie called Robot Jocks. Totally obscure. By the way, Jocks, J-O-X. Just a scene, and it's a crowd screaming, and they managed to isolate that one sound and use it to great effect here. It's creepy. By the way, this is at the point where my mom's like, "Honey, come down for dinner." And I'm hearing this, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Another song with an interesting time signature. I So again, Trent has a certain knack for being able to create tons of layers for each song. So much happening, which is why it's probably really easy to do remixes for him, because he has tons of elements to tinker with. So definitely a very ambitious album. I think he was probably only 29 or 30 when he recorded this. And after the downward spiral, he, well, quite actually went down a downward spiral himself. Now, you know, the actual legit details of what he was up to at that point are probably only known to several people. Now, in interviews of late, he was talking about kind of the era, you know, post downward spiral, kind of during the Fragile and stuff like that. He was a very heavy drinker, but I have to believe that there are probably other things happening as well, since he does make I think a pretty clear reference to doing heroin in the song Hurt at the very end of this album. So I don't know, Trent's definitely a conflicted individual of demons, which is perfectly fine, as it, I think, helps him become a very interesting and unique artist. So now we have Trent chanting here, "It won't give up, it wants me dead. God damn this noise inside my head." And has a pretty nice little falsetto scream here towards the end. Rounded out here with a nice little acoustic guitar at the end, and all kinds of weird, like, washing machine noises and shit. So this album wasn't completely produced by Trent himself. He was using the help of a fellow producer. He went by the name of Flood. Definitely did a lot of good work on this album. Now we kind of transition into the second half. Even though it always cracked me up because, you know, on a cassette, much like vinyl, you had to flip it over. So, if I remember correctly, I think the last song on the first side was Big Man with a Gun, and then picked up with A Warm Place on the next half. But of course, don't worry about that with CDs. Or MP3s. See, you can totally tell there's a channel missing, because there are beats missing in this part right here. Well, you know how this world can beat you down. Yeah, there's more to it. I don't know what I can't explain this stupid equipment. I'll figure it out at some point, people. Don't worry. Of a little eerie piano there, and now we have a Trent doing a little spoken word here in the background. You can barely just hear it, and that's not the production of the song, that is my faulty equipment. So I've heard complaints over the years that Trent doesn't have a great singing voice, but I disagree. Even if it's not, you know, necessarily classically trained or operatic or on pitch all of the time, it's a perfect combination. His voice and the music, I think. And he also has a certain knack to sound very tortured throughout all of his songs. So he pulls that off well. I don't think it's an act. I think he does it quite naturally because, frankly, Trent is an interesting character. I remember hearing an interview with Al Jorgensen from Ministry, and someone had asked him about Trent, because they have worked together a few times over the years, both in the kind of weird mishmash group of industrial artists called Pigface, and also, in fact, maybe that's it, because Trent sang on the song Supernaut they did, or actually that it was really Al Jorgensen's baby, but anyway, the point is... They knew each other pretty well. And the interview, when I was listening to it, someone asked me, you know, what was Trent like? What was he like to be around? Al kind of laughs, and he's like, you know, he's just a real downer. He's like, you know, we're all depressed. We're all depressed people, because otherwise we wouldn't make music like this. But he was just like a bummer to be around, because Al is known for being a very wild partier. And I think even though Trent might have dabbled in, you know, the accoutrement, I don't think that he was necessarily a social person as much as Al was. So I mean, he was describing how, you know, he would try to have him over for dinner because they lived in the kind of a, or he had a friend that lived in the same area, and how Trent was just a bummer to be around and a real downer at dinners and stuff like that because he was just always miserable. And who knows what's happened over the years? I mean, the guy's married now, and he's become an Oscar-winning film composer. Who would have thought that? But, yeah, guy has an Oscar for the Social Network soundtrack that he composed with Atticus Ross. And now he, Atticus, his wife, and a guy named Rob Sheridan have a new band called How to Destroy Angels, which is redolent of Nine Inch Nails. You can certainly hear some of Trent's work. I mean, because he's clearly part of the band, but it's not the style. Not harsh, not super depressing, but at the same time amazing and hauntingly beautiful at the same time. So this song, by the way, is called I Do Not Want This. Forgot to throw that track name out there. So I Do Not Want This. This is one of those albums, too. I'd like, if I got my hands on Trent, I'd love to ask him myriad things. But one thing I would like to ask him is, you know, what certain sounds are on this album. Because he even described in... there was a CD that came out called Disturbed. I think it was called Disturbed. Not the band Disturbed, but Nine Inch Nails. The CD was titled Disturbed. It was basically... It was solely an interview album. It was nothing other than this guy doing a phone interview with Trent. But... You know, he's talking about how he'd use a sound that, you know, if it was an interesting sound, he'd somehow find a way to insert it into the song. I think the example he used at the time was, you know, it could be the sound of, you know, 100 African children beating on the carcass of a dead elephant, and it would sound really cool, so I'll find a way to put it into the song. So, you know, I really like to know if maybe, you know, is that sound in fact in the Downward Spiral somewhere? Are we hearing washing machines and vacuum cleaners and stuff like that? I don't know. He's a very, very crafty sound engineer, Trent. And I like this lyric here. It's just funny to me. Pretty ambitious to try to fuck everyone in the world. Not a lot of people. What are we at now? 5 billion people? Something like that? Is it 4? Is it 5? Is it 7? Gosh, I can't remember. So this song is called Big Man with a Gun, and as, again, my friend Rob points out, this song is a poke at the kind of gangster rap at the time. Or, of course, the rappers would boast about their virility and how much poonanny they got. And of course, they're always very, you know, very macho. And as you can tell here, he's forcibly giving it to somebody. I am going to come all over you. Wow. That's not subtle at all. By the way, there's another sample used in the beginning of the song, which is, according to Trent, it was a distorted clip of a porno, of someone climaxing, essentially. And I kind of tweaked with the sound to make it extra bizarre. This is also one of the shortest songs on this album. With a nice cold ending there. Now we flip the cassette tape over. Now we're into a song called A Warm Place. Which is interesting because, you know, as it is vastly different than the track that precedes it in terms of tone and everything else. It's, even though it's a warm place, it's still very, very melancholy, and when you hear the little motif he does here, it's not exactly happy, but it's beautiful nonetheless. The kind of pulsating bass in the background. It was around the time that he did this album that he was hired to be the, music director of the soundtrack for Natural Born Killers, directed by Oliver Stone, written, by the way, by Quentin Tarantino. I think a lot of people don't realize that, but that was a Tarantino script that was, again, not directed by him, which is somewhat rare. He tends to, of course, write and direct all of his own stuff, but Oliver Stone took the directing reins, and from what I've heard, Tarantino wasn't exactly thrilled with the end result. But nonetheless, I think it's a really cool movie. But as Trent did assemble the soundtrack for that, which is a very eclectic, again, as I mentioned the last show, I think, very eclectic mix of songs. Trent clearly has a wide musical taste, or wide variety of taste. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Wide spectrum of taste. And this song actually made it into the film. There's a scene where they're in one of the penitentiary where Mickey and Mallory are being held, and they play this at one point. They also play Something I Can Never Have off his first album, Pretty Hate Machine. But A Warm Place. I think a really simple yet brilliant track. Some genius shit right there. And much like Enigma, the group Enigma, Trent likes to kind of, at least in this album for sure, likes to really kind of transition one song into the other without a break, with the exception, of course, you know, Big Man with the Gun there, a few other tracks, but for the most part it's one seamless sonic enjoyment happy time. So this is called Eraser, this song, and what you're hearing right now is, from what I read, it's a thing called straw blowing, which is basically you take a saxophone, and he's blowing through it. He's not, I think maybe you have to take the reed out, but he's working the keys there, the valves or whatever on the saxophone, but you know, not actually producing any notes, just kind of blowing through it. So anyway, apparently that's what this is, because wow, a little louder than I anticipated. Trent actually did used to play saxophone in high school. And he also, early in his life, was a pianist as well. And from his Rolling Stone article back in the 94, he said that he piano was okay, but he knew by the age of 12 or 13 that he wasn't going to get laid being a pianist. So he moved on to learn other instruments, funny that he mentions that, because I can sort of, I mean, I understand kind of what he's saying. Maybe the piano's not really a macho instrument, but you got to think that people like Billy Joel probably got a lot of ass in their time. Same with Elton John. I don't think the ass he was getting is what Trent was looking for. Although his sexuality was very ambiguous at one point. I mean, now he's married, and so we just have to, you know, assume that that's real and not a beard. And I'll totally give him the benefit of the doubt and say, yes, he is totally straight. But there was a long time where I think it was pretty questionable. So this is a cool song. I think this is a song that, to me, begs to have an image alongside of it, a moving image. You know, I think this would be a really cool video to direct. I don't think there was ever a video released for the song, but I like the instrumental buildup and then when it kind of gets very chaotic towards the end as the vocals come in. Well, you'll see. But Eraser, cool track. This guitar part, this you know, the reverb-y guitar here in the background reminds me a lot of the song off the Broken EP, Help Me, I'm in Hell. Guitar is kind of similar. It's certainly not the same by any means, but they sound similar to me. Hear the like stuff revving up in the background here. A couple of good remixes of this song on Further Down the Spiral, and one of them he takes his Erase Me here at the end and stretches it out, so you can't, I mean, if you're just casually listening, you have no idea what it just sounds like, somebody kind of screaming in the background. But if you fast forward on the CD, it's just Erase Me, Erase Me, Erase Me. I also wanted to mention earlier in the song, oh gosh, I believe it's Ruiner. Wow, I feel really bad now. I think it's either Ruiner or Becoming. I think it's Ruiner, though, that the drummer from Stabbing Westward gave a little drum solo on that track. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Anyway, so that's Eraser. Now, speaking of cool samples, you hear that? Weird looped sound. When I was a kid, before I had seen the movie, I thought, to me, that sounded like someone, you know, working on a machine in the gym, like with the weight going up and it goes clank when it hits the, you know, the weights at the bass. For a long time, I really thought that's what that was, but it's, an obscure-ass movie. There's a movie called Leviathan, which is kind of an underwater version of the movie The Thing. It's just, you know, cool undersea horror movie. And it's just a weird, isolated clip of the sound of the ship creaking and stuff. And took that and worked in the song Reptile here. And there's also a great there's a great sample in this song from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's extremely brief, and it's one of those ones that, you know, I just have a weird ear for this kind of thing. When I at this point had not seen Texas Chainsaw. It was actually probably around the same year that I got this album and I saw that finally, but turns out it's one of my favorite movies. And there's a scene where two of the quote-unquote teens or whatever they are at the time are walking down a hill. They're trying to find a little like a little lake to swim in or a little river, and the riverbed is all dried up. You know, it's just grass at that point. She's stumbling down the hill, and she's saying, "Kirk, help." And that's really all you hear in the thing. But I'll point it out here when it comes out, but it's later in the song. So Reptile to me kind of is just a very poetic description of a slut, basically, a whore. Seeds from a thousand others drip down from within. Yeah, it seems pretty clear to me, but maybe I'm off. So again, this is one of this one received a little remix love on the, not so much on Further Down the Spiral, but on the March of the Pigs remix single that came out before Downward Spiral was released, and again on the re-release of the album, where he did the 5.1 surround sound mix, there's a demo version of the song. But a nice strong tune, I think. So all this is playing, I'm trying to describe sort of the artwork for the album that Trent did not do himself. He left it to the hands of a professional. It's all kinds of really bizarre stuff. One of the inserts looks like, with the logo on it, looks like old cracked leather kind of stuff. And it's not. That was clearly a drawing. But, or maybe it's not. Who knows? But there's an interesting image that he calls the teeth and salt trail, and that's really what it is. It's like a looks kind of like a warped metal plate with teeth kind of pounded into it, and then these little trails of salt coming out, and that kind of taper off at the end. It's a cool image. Also used a lot of weird fabrics and stuff, and like, you know, there's a what looks like wires coming out of this cloth wall and the moths stuck to it and stuff. It's a very, very, very strange image, but very effective, and I think it complements the album very well. So again, I don't know. Of course, music is extremely subjective, but I personally find this to be Nine Inch Nails' Trent, whatever, best album to date, even still. You know, in the past few years, he's released a couple albums. One, Ghosts, which was instrumental, basically. Very long, though. A lot of tracks on that. Wasn't a huge fan of the With Teeth album. I did like Fragile okay. It had some really strong moments, but not as cohesive, I think, as Downward Spiral. Oh, here's the Texas Chainsaw. You hear saying Kirk help there. So again, just really, I love that he just puts these completely random movie samples into the songs. I think it really makes it sound all that more eerie. I'm trying to think in the live band that he assembled for this tour included guitarist Robin Fink, who has played with Nine Inch Nails quite a bit. Good guitarist, odd person, and has a very interesting hairstyle, or I should say has very interesting hairstyles, plural. Danny Lawner played bass. Charlie Clouser was on keys. Chris Brenna drumming. And Charlie Clouser is also a very accomplished musician. He's worked with a bunch of different acts over the years. He does very good remix work, too. He actually even remixed a Type O Negative song. Well, Type O Negative cover of Cinnamon Girl. So Charlie Clouser is always good to hear stuff from him because he has a good ear. Wrapping up Reptile here. And now we get into the title track of the album, Downward Spiral. And I'd love to know what that sound is. What is that, like submarine? I mean, who knows? What could be, you know, a swarm of flies there in the background? Who knows with Trent? So here's that motif from the very end of Closer. It's now being plucked on the acoustic. This song is basically suicide attempt, lyrically. What is that? It sounds like a train coming into a station there. Like, who knows? Steady bass there, steady bass line with the weird, sounds like, you know, guitar just bending the guitar notes, just a little bit dissonant, just enough to be Nine Inch Nails. This is not my equipment that's making the song sound muffled. This is how it is on the album. Now we move into the final track. A song called Hurt, which is very beautiful. Very depressing. And I've seen a couple clips of this live where he's either truly affected by his work here and breaks down crying, or is just a really good actor. So, this song was eventually covered by Johnny Cash, and it's probably one of the better covers of all time. And you think, oh, that's got to be a strange cover, Johnny Cash doing Hurt. But not only is, I mean, he does a terrific job of it, but if you watch the video for Hurt, the Johnny Cash cover, I defy you to not tear up a little bit. It's pretty damn emotional. And if that was I think that was kind of around the time that he passed away. So definitely check that cover out if you haven't already, as I'm talking over one of the prettiest parts of the song. But I'll let Trent take over here. Reverse reverb on that. You can hear the vocals creeping up. This is totally random. There was a show on MTV around this time, and I truly can't recall the name of the actual name of the show, but the idea was that you know, this is kind of first interactive TV thing. They play a video, and people could go online and write in what they thought the lyrics were, or just kind of chat about the song. I mean, I think you could pretty much say anything, but I think a lot of it was people would recite lyrics and stuff like that. And I remember for this video, everyone thought he was saying "My Empire of Darts." Does that make any sense? Why the hell would a guy have an empire of darts? What is this, a fucking English pub? No, Empire of Dirt. Come on. Think. I am still right here. And again, Trent's either a very good actor, or he was certainly emotionally affected even recording the song, because you can hear it in his voice. Oh, somebody break out the dartboard. Beware of the sharp musical sting that's about to come up. Prepare yourself. So there it is, as the album ends on a tritone, kind of a dissonant interval there, the tritone. So that's it, that's the Downward Spiral. Hope you have enjoyed it. I know I have. It's actually been a little while since I've listened to it in entirety, from beginning to end, without any breaks. So there it is. There's there, in my opinion, one of Trent's finest moments. Downward Spiral released 1994. And didn't have another album until 99 when The Fragile came out. So anyway, it's been fun chilling with y'all. And hopefully either this exposed you to a group that you either had not been privy to, or maybe gave you a little bit of insight into the album itself. So that is Downward Spiral. I might do another Nine Inch Nails album down the line, as we have the as the album slowly burns out here. So I'll be back with you soon, probably Friday. I think I'm going to do a show devoted to the group Deftones. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. That was Downward Spiral. Catch you later.